Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Christopher Lynch, CEO of Ancient Advantage and staff member on CPMC's Health and Healing Center. Christopher Lynch is founder and CEO of Ancient Advantage, which provides training to corporations and philanthropic organizations. He's been teaching for 14 years on these topics at CPMC, especially Tai Chi, Qigong, and other meditative practices. Christopher has taken his teaching now into San Francisco high schools, seeing a need to bring this to a younger generation, and it's been embraced here in San Francisco at the high school level. Formerly, he was on the board of Freddie Mac and chair of the audit committee, and retired after a career of 30 years with KPMG's audit firm. So he's worked in high finance, knows what stress is all about, and now he knows what relaxing is all about. Let's welcome Christopher Lynch.
Thank you, John, and the Commonwealth Club for having me here this evening. Just a couple of clarifications. I wish that was the case, John, but actually I'm the current audit committee chair and a member of the board at Freddie Mac, so I really understand stress these days. It's a privilege to be here this evening, and thank you for many guests that I have not met prior to this evening and for many of my colleagues and fellow students that are here in support of really an area that I'm just unbelievably passionate about. As John indicated, I had spent over 30 years running the financial services practice in North America for KPMG, so I understand the rigors of travel, the challenges of trying to keep people motivated in difficult times and in good times. And our $2 billion a year practice was very vibrant. It had some 8,000 team members across the country, and I would literally leave on Sunday mornings at about 6 o'clock and get back at 11 o'clock on Friday evening. And it wasn't too many years of that type of a rigorous schedule that I decided I probably needed to find and adhere to my own principles about balance in life. So it's really fantastic to be here tonight. And the topic I really want to explore is this ability to use some of the ancient practices that have been out there for 4,000 years in order to make a meaningful and substantive difference in our health each and every day. And I start this topic really focused on the number one issue, and that is energy itself, because I think in my mind energy is the hidden treasure. So I look at this, and the most important thing is to understand why energy is such an imperative. Excuse me just a moment. Why energy is such an imperative, how we can go about identifying in a 4,000-year history what some of the practices and disciplines that our ancestors, who were infinitely more aware and knowledgeable about what was occurring in nature, and how we can use some of those practices today, how we can take those tools and look at the energy that we have within ourselves and begin a process to cultivate and refine that energy and make it better and more vibrant every day. And then exactly trying to get specific from the esoteric to the practical, how can you start applying these techniques every single day? So I start with a premise about why is all of this a challenge for us today, right now? And, you know, as I look back on almost 20 years of studying this, I think the number one issue that I find is that the Eastern style of teaching, Tai Chi, Qigong, and meditation, they're just not well accepted and they're not embraced here in the West. And there's a lot of reasons for that. First and foremost, You look at the number of people, many of you commuted here this evening. Many of you had to rush to get off of your jobs. Many of you had to adjust your private evenings or childcare considerations to be here. Busy lives lead to busy minds. And if you look around at where we work, how we recreate, the types of things that we do, as a general rule, I would use the characterization, we are indoor enthusiasts. And if you roll back some 4,000 years, as soon as they woke up in the morning, made just a little bit of tea, the rest of their day was spent outside, communing with nature, understanding nature, integrating with nature. And if you look at our typical day, it's rush and hit the button for the automatic coffee to come down, put something in the microwave, get in the car, drive to the air-conditioned, humidity-adjusted facility where we spend the entire day, and we get back in our car and we drive home. And very seldom do we enjoy many of the extraordinary benefits of outdoors and nature that our ancestors did. I also think one of the real challenges that exists today is that we come to the world of self-healing as a last resort. Something has failed in Western medicine. It's not addressed our needs. It hasn't worked quickly enough, and we absolutely come to these disciplines as a course of last resort. And finally, I think each of us have to reflect upon our own ambitions, our own motivations, but many of us want instantaneous and immediate results. And by definition, many of these disciplines are based in investment, time, and patience, and don't lend themselves well for the immediate consumption of a pill to address a symptom. And then finally, the last item I would say, very seldom do people really enjoy giving up their peace and solitude. It is one of the prized treasures that each of us focus on. And when you look at many of these disciplines, meditation, Qigong, and Tai Chi, they are greatly enhanced in the classroom environment, where the cumulative energy of the group right now in this room is infinitely stronger than anything you could create in your home environment or in your home practice. So we have this very healthy tension that exists where we love to be alone, we love our coffee, we love our newspaper, we like reading our books, watching our programs. We actually just don't want anyone in our space. And in fact, these disciplines lend themselves to extraordinary benefits are available when we actually share them with others. So I look at this paradigm, this paradox and the challenge, and what I see going on, whether you define your life as in the home, in the church, among your volunteer and community groups, or in your business, as exponential demands. The demands are going up. They're more complicated, demand more of your time, and you're responding to those demands. My nomenclature, you permit yourself to be plugged in. How many of you, just a show of hands, are carrying your crackberries, as my children call it, or blackberries, or personal handheld devices? And it is certainly a generational phenomena, because if you ask that question to a group of audiences that I sometimes speak under 30, there is not a hand in the room that doesn't rise. So we're talking about a new generation that communicates, interacts, and has a degree of focus and concentration and patience that is far different even from those who reside in this room. The problems that each of us are encountering are no longer black and white. They're no longer textbook responses. They're multifaceted, they're complicated, and most importantly, they require very thoughtful deliberation to solve those problems. So what we see emerging is the need to no longer be a generalist, but to become a specialist. And you see this in the world of business, where I operate in financial services, and I interact with people who are credit default swap specialists, interest rate risk specialists, modeling specialist, and you see it in healthcare, and you see it in education, and you see it in business. The world is taking on not just specialization, but super specialization. And as a result, it's becoming more and more difficult for us to communicate and be on the same page because people are operating on different platforms. So what you see in this paradox is the need for all of us to be more empathetic, more innovative, more intuitive. And what I always hear in almost every corporation and every organization that I speak to, the typical response is, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to deal with the demands because I'm plugged in and everybody can get to me 24/7. I don't have the time and the energy and the focus to come up with really creative solutions. And if I just had an hour more to think about that, I might have gotten a different answer. And I am becoming too much of a specialist. And I think my response has been increasingly, it's not a question of time. The real issue is you don't have enough energy to deal with the demands being placed on you. So it's within that context that I come up with many of the groups that I speak to with a scorecard. And imagine, if you will, there are two columns in this scorecard. There are assessments that you'll make. I'll go through six categories in just a moment. You make these assessments, and you decide whether in that part of your world you're building and cultivating your energy, or if you're depleting and pushing your energy out the door. So the first is just your daily plan. How many of you have a daily plan? Does it really work like clockwork, or are you constantly either reprioritizing it yourself or permitting others to reprioritize your schedule? So it's either a plus or it's a minus in that category. Travel. Bay areas, lots of congestion, lots of traffic. Many of you probably fly from city around the country as I do. Are you able to commute through airports, on the roads, maintain some type of an exercise regimentation? Are you able to focus on your diet? Are you staying well hydrated? It's either you're depleting your energy or you're cultivating your energy. Work setting, and this is the one that often brings smiles in. It doesn't really matter whether it's work setting, family setting, or your community group setting. And the adage, I heard this 8 or 9 years ago from a gentleman who spoke over in Germany at a program that I was at, and he called it, is your work environment Bombay in the summer or Fontainebleau in the spring? And it really was a very rich visual metaphor that helped me understand there are some places you love to go to work. It doesn't matter if you're working 12 or 14, 15 hours a day. It doesn't matter that there is volatility in that company. You love the corps d'esprit that exists within that group. And there are other places you're paid a lot of money, and it's very prestigious and very prominent, and you can't stand walking in the door. And it doesn't take many years in the job that I had. I can smell those environments the second I walk into those companies. And it's very, very different. So assess whether the thing where you spend the majority of your time, if it's Fontainebleau in the spring or if it's Bombay or Calcutta in the summer. Look at your coping tactics. How well do you do with stress? Great example. I had an extraordinary presentation with beautiful slides. Guess what? They don't work here this evening. These are the tools that we learn to be adaptive. We learn to be flexible. And we learn not to be obsessed with, I worked so hard, I wanted you to see the fruits of my effort. It's really irrelevant. We're here to just converse, and you have to be able to cope and deal with all types of unexpected developments and turns in the road that you did not expect when you started the day. So ask yourself, what is your coping capabilities? Are you generating energy, or are you depleting your energy by worrying? And the salient question here is, are you at your absolute best when it's crunch time? The last one, family environment. Is your family environment collaborative or confrontational? And we have teenagers, young kids, working wife. We have a very, very active household, and it has all the normal healthy tensions and strains that any household does. But we really try to focus on appreciation and creating that environment where it's enriching and nourishing as opposed to confrontational, because it's easy with all of those unique dynamics to be fairly short with one another. So let me, if energy might, for a moment, If energy might be the key to all of this, let me talk about what I think the fundamental building block of energy is. Qi. You've heard this term in the West and the East. It's invisible to the eye. Oftentimes it's viewed as not measurable, very difficult to see, but it's extraordinarily real. And it is the internal energy that exists in all living humans, plants, animals, all living organisms. There are many different sources of qi, but I put them into three general categories. The prenatal qi that we receive from the DNA of the contributing parents. It is the very essence of what we are, and it's the vitality that we use in the very early years. Shortly thereafter, we begin food and substance and nourishment and consume liquids, and that becomes an additional source of qi. And then finally, we can begin over time to find certain environments, outdoor activities, sunshine, fresh air, walking. The way we live, our lifestyle can be a major contributor to generating energy or depleting energy. So I'm going to introduce three practices that really have a 4,000-year-old history. And each of those practices require just what I refer to as a level set. And if you imagine if you've gone into any of your science textbooks with any of your kids in recent years, you see the pictorial grams of the neural system. And the nerves go all out into the arms, down through the legs, all the way up into the heads, clear into the fingernails. And there was an exhibit a couple of years ago at the Academy of Sciences here in San Francisco that actually showed, when you dried that all out, exactly what that neural network looked like in the body. And there is a network of the blood system, the veins, the arteries, the capillaries, and you've seen that. So it should not be unexpected that there is another highway, another mapping device that in traditional Chinese medicine has been there for 4,000 years, and it's called the meridians and the vessels. So the way to look at this is there are 12 meridians, and each of those meridians coincides with one of the critical internal organs of the body. There are six of those organs and six of those meridians that are the yang side, the vibrant, enthusiastic, vigorous energy. And there are six of those organs and six of those meridians that are the yin, the very soft side. So you've all run into individuals and personalities that when you shake their hand, they almost crush every bone in your hand. And those would typically be characterized as those strong on the yang side. And you've also met people that are very frail, have very, very pale complexion, and they are having balance issues on the yin side. So the challenge for each of us, because every woman in this room has six of those yang meridians and six of those yang organs, and every man in the room has six of those yin meridians and six of those yin internal organs, every one of us has to find a homeostasis and a balance of those 12 organs and those 12 meridians. We call these meridians the rivers. They permit the qi to flow all through the body in the rivers. Now, the vessels are a little bit different. The vessels represent lakes, if you will. There is one vessel that runs on the back side of the body, right up the spine. There is another vessel that runs on the front side of the body, right down the middle of the sternum to the waist. There is a vessel that runs effectively along the belt line of the body. And then there is one vessel that runs right up the very middle of the body called the thrusting vessel. There are two in the heels, one in each heel, and two in each leg. Those are like the lakes. And when the lakes have no qi, just like the Western U.S., and they start to dry up, the performance of the organism goes straight down. So the goal is that the rivers need to run, and they need to run freely, and the lakes need to have something in them. They need to be open and vibrant and abundant. So the goal of these three practices is we have to get the rivers running. No tributary can be closed off, and we have to have an abundant supply in the lakes for the spillover to keep the whole system working. So let me start with meditation. Meditation is pronounced in Chinese characters, in two different characters, Ru Jing. Ru means to be alone. If you've ever seen the Chinese character, it's effectively an upside down V. It means we are alone in life. Jing means calm. It actually means the absence of calm, the absence of movement. And the idea is that when we are alone, we can actually be calm and avoid confrontation. But whenever two alones come together, we have the possibility for friction and tension. So meditation is this beautiful combination of these two Chinese characters that say the only time we can have peace and quiet is when we're alone. So there's a reason why you like your quiet time. You agree with everything you think. So when we're in meditation, we really have a fairly singular goal, just to slow down and clear the mind. And in that process, we begin to try to look inside the body. Now, inevitably, what our students will comment more most of the time is that as soon as I slow my mind down, all these racing thoughts and disruptions and interruptions come, and meditation's just not for me. I just don't enjoy it at all. But in fact, that's the beginning that you're on the right path, because it is the mind starting to reorganize and clean house. It's the closet that is long overdue of a little sprucing up, and it starts automatically to tidy itself up. So there will be disruptive thoughts, and over time, with some persistence and patience, you'll start to notice an extraordinary sensation that your head, the head region, I call it almost an electric football helmet that you put on. You feel this extraordinary pressure and vibrancy, and you know deep inside you're getting very deep cellular stimulation. And it's absolutely an extraordinary phenomena to hold. But we try not to trace it. We accept it for what it is, that it's present. But it's absolutely an incredible feeling. And it's one of the earlier sensations that you'll start to have. So in meditation, we have this phenomena that in stillness, there is in fact movement. And the quieter we are, the more we become aware of those movements occurring in the body. But it does require profound quietness. So this is where you start to see in the traditional yin-yang symbol, we start to see yin embodied in yang and yang present in yin. So in meditation, I look at this. There are a couple of mechanics that we focus on. And the first is posture. Most people that come in, we either have them stand up, sit on the floor, or sit on a stool. And inevitably, the first attribute you'll see, they'll be all slumped over because they're exhausted. You can see the way a person sits, whether they have good and powerful and vibrant energy. So the first thing we work on is posture, and we ask them as if you were suspended from the top hair of your head, be absolutely perfectly upright. So they focus on their hand position. We focus on the crown. I'll touch a little bit more about this, but one of the most important elements in meditation is the bridge. And I'll come to that bridge, but it effectively is the tongue being placed on the upper palate of the mouth. I'll explain this in just a minute, but without that tongue, the energy gets stuck at a certain point right above the bridge of the nose as it separates and has to reverse course and go back the other direction. It's very, very unproductive for your meditation and for your health. So if you leave with one practical solution this evening, keep your tongue on the upper palate of your mouth the rest of your life. It is the greatest experience. You'll feel an unbelievable tingling in your saliva. The amount of saliva production that you'll increase is profound, and you'll actually find it's one of the great treasures that you have. Now, the next item we talk about, and I would hope in any session, if you've ever taken a meditative class, If you've come out of that meditative class as a graduate, if you will, and you don't know what the term Don Diem means, you really do not understand meditation. The Don Diem is, again, a combination of two Chinese characters. The first, Don, means medicine, the internal potential of the body to create its own medicine. Diem is used in two analogies. It's either, and the character is beautiful. It's just a square with a cross in between it. And it looks exactly like the 4 acres of a farm from those of you with an agrarian background. It looks exactly like the square with a cross in it. And it does symbolize the 4 acres. The acres are the farm. And guess who's the farmer? You are. And when you meditate and when you tend to the potential crop that of medicine that you have inside of you, you can harvest the produce of the field. And the other analogy that is used is that the diem is a factory. The factory is of no benefit whatsoever if there's no current and electricity, no lights, no machines, no input, no output. You have to have current, you have to have electricity to drive the factory. So Don Diem is either the creation and boiling and movement through the factory to generate all the produce and output, or it's viewed as the harvesting of our own internal medicine. So we talk about three different energy centers. The first is the lower Don Diem, which is right below the waistline. The second is right in the middle of the sternum, in the middle of the chest. And the third is right in between the eyebrows, the third eye. So each of these has a different name. Jing, I talked about the three sources of energy. Jing is prenatal essence. So Jing resides in the lower Don Diem. All of the food and substance and day-to-day activities is hei, which is pronounced Q-I, hei. So Jing, hei, sun. Sun is the ultimate transformation of the prenatal energy and all the food and everything we consume into spirit or shin. So the postures, I alluded to that earlier. We always start our students sitting. Some of you are actually sitting just like that on about the front half of the seat where you're not leaning against the back. The back of a chair, of any device, a couch, a divan, whatever, actually takes some of your energy out of your body. So when you sit nice and erect and don't touch the back marker, you can actually have a great sensation of the energy flowing very easily. Many of our students, as I indicated, come and they're exhausted at the end of the day, and we place them lying down on a mat. And in many instances, most of them drift away pretty quickly. So we try to find some postures where they'll cross their legs so that they can actually stay awake. But we frequently have snoring meditation in many of our classes, even though that's not the goal. And then aesthetics, we try to really make sure there's fresh air in the room, soft music. Many of the students that are here this evening actually helped me do massage to the people. So we try and create this extraordinary environment where you're very comfortable, very relaxed, and we give you permission to just let that incredible sorting of the mind occur. So you'll all often hear, especially in meditative circles, about the orbits, the small orbit and the large orbit. And I wanted to spend just a moment so that people understand that. The small orbit starts at the lower Don Diem that I mentioned was right below the navel. It proceeds downward between the legs, comes up on the backside, and goes through three different gates on what is referred to as the governor vessel, which is the first vessel on the back. One of those gates is right below the belt line. One of the gates is in the middle of the back, and one is at the top of the spine area. If you're not relaxed and you don't have a straight posture, your energy is going to get blocked at one of those three gates, and it will stay there, and it will get stagnant, and you'll have a variety of different uncomfortable sensations as that occurs. So the idea is to keep that energy moving up to the very top of the head to a point called Bakwoi. And this is a very important point that we speak to our students about, because it's actually our connection with energy in the celestial area, the moon, the stars, the sun, etc. So when it comes down from Bakwoi, it converts from the governor vessel to the conception vessel. And it gets right to the top of the nose, and it breaks right there and comes on both sides of the nostrils. And that's where it has the potential of getting stuck, unless the tongue is the bridge. And the tongue then permits the energy to come down and complete that circle back below the navel. And that's referred to as the small orbit. Now, there are a variety of different practices, some of them very esoteric, where you can send it one direction, and then you can reverse it one direction. Some you take it up the thrusting in the very middle of the body and back down on the backside or on the front side. All of those represent different levels of awareness and proficiency of the practitioner to be able to move the energy in multiple different directions. It just takes time. It takes awareness. But it's, again, it's an illustration that in stillness there is great movement. And to the outside observer, you would never have any idea that the individual was moving energy in their body. But it's a very, very distinct and profound feeling, because the energy is quite warm. It can almost feel a little bit like biting ants. It's a very, very indistinguishable feeling. Now, the large orbit is where we can actually begin to move the energy into the palms, all the way down the arms, into these points called Lao Gong on both palms, and at the very bottom of the feet, Yong Qin. So as you become more comfortable moving your energy through the small orbit, you then graduate into the larger orbit. And it takes many, many different years to get to that level of proficiency, and many people spend a lifetime trying to get to that level. But it is thought in traditional Chinese circles that if you can learn to move the energy through the small orbit and into the large orbit through all the appendages, your ability to control and keep illness away is greatly enhanced at that level. And then on many of these points, we've talked about the upper dantian and the middle dantian, and you see those in quite a few of the major energy points on the body that are always highlighted when people talk about the small orbit and the large orbit. So let me spend just a couple of minutes talking about the second treasure, and I think that is Qigong. And Qigong is, again, a combination of two unique Chinese characters. Qi, we talked about. It is the vital energy of life. And Gong is to work hard, to practice, to repeat something over and over and over again. So when you bring those two characters together, Qigong is the practice of trying to move breath energy. So it's very gentle movements. I think many of the students that are attracted to it find it does not take a great deal of athletic prowess, but the movements are very, very slow. And for those audio, you won't see this, but the difference in raising your hands very, very slowly, where it's not a muscular movement, it's a mental energy, where you're just letting the air raise your hands up and down. And what I see when we start students is they move in segments. So if you ask them to raise their hand, I can count about 7 or 8 segments on the way up. And what I ask them to think about is, can you break that down into maybe 100 segments your first time? And the look on their face as they go click, 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 click is extraordinary, because we don't think that way. Our whole cognitive processing teaches us to take the unbelievably complex and just distill it down. And these disciplines say, take the unbelievably simple and break it and go the other way. And most people find that's the extraordinary treasure. This is not about the movements. It's about a vehicle to train the mind to operate on a much, much higher level, where we're much more focused, we're much more intuitive, and we're much more insightful, because we've reversed our cognitive processing capabilities. Qigong, one of its beauties is we try and do it outdoors. where there's an abundance of fresh air. And we try to supercharge the body with all the natural nutrients that are in the air. And many of our students come and walk a couple of laps with us. And they say, my God, I'm so faint-headed. I feel really dizzy. Maybe I should sit down. And we try to tell them it's that hyperventilation that has occurred because of the maximum oxygen intake. You have begun feeding cells that are completely starved for oxygen based upon your daily routine, and it's no wonder that you're starting to feel a little hyperventilated. As they begin to become a little bit more accustomed to that level of oxygen supplementing at the cellular level, they start to feel very relaxed. Their shoulders relax. They start to see a natural spring in their step. And the vitality and energy that they needed, possibly they couldn't even walk one lap, they find they can do 10 laps, 20 laps. So the fresh air is a key component of this. And I often get asked, you know, is there one form of Qigong that's better than the others? And I would tell you, I don't think so. I believe that there are thousands of different forms. Each of them have different benefits. Each of them correspond with different internal organs and different health objectives that they're trying to meet. If they're done well, they're all extraordinarily effective. If they're done haphazardly, it doesn't matter if you run through 99% of them every single day, you won't get any benefit out of them. They must be done with great mental discipline and focus. So a couple that we work on is the walking Qigong. It was actually started in China for those that did not have access to chemo, radiation, or any of the diagnostic capabilities that we have in the West. And ironically, their survival rate is higher than what we have in the United States. Because they don't make the mistake that we make in the West. As soon as we have the surgery, as soon as we have the chemo and radiation, we believe it's time to get back to work immediately and go right back into our lifestyles. Where they understand there's a major change that has occurred in their life, and they embrace it as an opportunity to affect profound change in their life. And what they believe is it's time to be walking every day. It's time to be focused on my health every day. And obviously, the life I was leading was not conducive to great health because look what I came down with. So they have a very different orientation toward health, the preventative side of health, and when, in fact, those health challenges come, they react far differently than we do. We also have a beautiful movement that we do in the park on the weekends that combines self-massage and movement. So lots of shifting to the left and the right, forward and back, twisting at the waist, all trying to learn to massage yourself in portions of your body, your arms, your legs, your hands, your head, and combine weight shifting so that you are, in essence, by going through this dance sequence, you're moving your own chi around. You're stimulating and opening up your own meridians. Finally, we have one walk that is a little bit challenging where it requires a great deal of balance. But it is like the siphon on a pump. It's called the blue heron walk. And if you've ever watched a heron walk in nature, you know, one leg comes up, the arms come up, and then it slowly comes down. And then they take another step, and the leg comes almost straight up, the arms follow, and back down. Well, we've developed a walk that very much parallels that beautiful gait of the blue heron. It's very difficult to keep your balance, but it serves as a pump in that it pulls the energy up and down out of the body with each step because we come way up on the toe and land on the heel and back on the toe. It's a very challenging. I think people feel terrific, although most people would say their shoulders are just aching afterward because they're not quite relying on the energy to float their arms up. They're trying to use their muscles. And I will guarantee you after 10 minutes, your shoulders will be exhausted if you're trying to do it that way. And then the final area I would talk about under Qigong is an extraordinary exercise that a gentleman from China has brought us and taught to us. That has been used for over 4,000 years, and it started with the monks that meditated almost 16 hours a day, and they needed an extraordinary, simple, quick exercise
that could complement sitting still, sitting stationary in a cave often for 14, 16 hours. And one Fai Gong is just an extraordinary example, and most everyone who's ever done that and come and joined us in the park has found that to be an incredible experience. It's probably doesn't lend itself in this evening's program to a demonstration, but certainly you can check with any of the students in the audience. It's really a wonderful routine. So in Qigong and Tai Chi that I'll speak about in just a moment, what you now start to see is in movement, external movement that you can see, what we're focused on is stillness and being so quiet inside that the mind and the air start to move the body. So it is the complete opposite. It is the yang side of meditation, which is the yin component. And then in Tai Chi has a beautiful phrase. It's called the movement of immortality. And the reason it's given that name is it looks for the absolute most simplistic way to accomplish the objective of movement. It significantly increases your energy. So I typically direct my newer students, if they are just coming off of a surgery or they're very depleted in their health, they need to start with Qigong, because most will find Tai Chi gives them, the demands are almost too much. But after you've spent some time in Qigong and meditation, what I found over almost 20 years is the Tai Chi is this extraordinary fertilizer that really gives you the power, really gives you enormous energy. The form that we've been teaching over at California Pacific is the Yang Long form, and this has been passed down completely unchanged. And almost everywhere in the world that I've gone, all throughout Europe, all throughout South America, all throughout Asia, almost everywhere I went when I practiced this in my business travels, people would come up to me on the street and say, what is that form and where did you learn it? Because it's not been watered down. It's not been diluted by any people along the way that wanted to add their little mark and change it and reduce 37 steps to make it their little personal signature. This is the original form. And so it takes a while to learn, probably about 6 months just for the slow set, but it's an extraordinary opportunity. And then in Tai Chi, if any of you turned into the Olympics, you saw that extraordinary demonstration of 2008 Tai Chi masters that were part of the Olympics opening ceremonies. Just phenomenal to see. So very economical, absolutely brilliant in the design, and all we're doing is retracing the steps that the ancient masters had laid out to create this enormous reservoir of energy for yourself. So again, as I said, the goal is not the form. It's not the 108 movements. The goal is to train the mind to break the movements, a simple movement, into 1,000 points of observations in a single movement. That's where your mind starts to become in touch with unbelievable intuitive and creative and resourceful and productive ideas that they come to me in the middle of the form. My most vexing business problems, I always would leave the office, go do Tai Chi, because that's where my great insights and my great creativity came from. And many, many people report that's their most fertile time. So the question is, does this stuff work today? And here's what I think some of the differences are. Today, this knowledge is starting to become available. The internet has been fantastic. I will tell you, in the 2 years since I've retired, I have translated through electronic enablement more Chinese text into English and learned more about this in the last 2 years than I knew in my first 18. It's extraordinary the amount of information that is becoming available now. It's portable. It's scalable. As I said, you can do it all by yourself. You can do it with 1,000 people in the room. It's even infinitely better, exponentially better with 1,000 people in the room. It's economical. Learn the form, you have it for life. I think people are gathering more easily today. People are more comfortable flying across the country for a conference. People are more comfortable going down to the convention center here in San Francisco and being a part of 3,000 or 4,000 people. And people are more comfortable walking into a park that they have never been in their life as a complete stranger and saying, "May I join you?" Well, that didn't happen 10 years ago. And I've been in these same parks. I've seen these same faces. Somewhere, the courage came to many of these people, and I've seen them for 18 years. All of a sudden, they're saying, "May I join you?" So something is starting to change out there, and people are beginning to open to the possibilities. My view is people are also looking for things that are simple. Simplicity is becoming the new necessity in life because everything else around us is so complicated, unnecessarily so, I might add, that simplicity is the only thing that we can hold on to. And I think that's why these ancient practices are working extraordinarily well today. So let me give you maybe a little bit of a snapshot of what I call my roadmap to health. And I'll give you just a little bit of an idea of my daily routine. I try to rise early, and to rise early, you have to go to bed early. Now, I was really fortunate as a young boy. I spent my first 16 or 17 years on my family's ranch in the middle of Kansas. And my mother would ship me out from the city starting the last day of school and don't come back until the first day of school. And I rose every morning early, all that fresh air, all that quiet time. And in many respects, the people who lived in that environment, they were Taoist. They were very relaxed, very in tune with nature, and loved living off the land. So I like to rise early. Ideally, if you think in terms of what are the optimal times of the day to meditate, in Chinese medicine, we really think of four different windows inside of a 24-hour clock. The first window begins at the beginning of that day, which is, in our parlance, 11 p.m. the night before. 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. is the opening of the day. It's the very first rich and fertile meditative cycle. The second time is from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., and that is what we would call the dawn. The third is right around the lunch hour from 11 to 1, and the fourth is at dusk from 5 to 7. It's probably not critical that you're absolutely like clockwork, and I'm a realist. I don't think anybody's going to practice on all four of those, but I think what's important is that you see there are times of the day that are more, pay bigger returns for your investment. What's really critical is that you just pick one time of the day, even if it's 15 minutes, and try to come back to that routine day in and day out. And it doesn't matter if it's at noon. It doesn't matter if it's at 5:45. What's important is that you try to develop somewhat of a routine and repetition. You'll be the judge of whether this is starting to work over time. And I can assure you, when I look at the number of things that I've reprioritized in my life, it's very easy and very quick. Once you see something is worthwhile, once you see it's worth the investment, it's very easy to start making changes in your life and reprioritizing. So start small, start modest, but develop some kind of a routine. Again, I like to rise early. I refresh myself for no more than 2 or 3 minutes, and then I try and spend about 45 minutes to an hour meditating. I go outside, but before I actually go outside, we have a 7 o'clock in the morning outdoor class, but I go through what I call a mobility assessment, and I will twist left, twist right, stretch left, stretch right, stretch forward, stretch back. I'll go through maybe 20 different exercises, and I will ascertain what is working well, what's not working well. And from there, I'm going to focus the rest of my program, the rest of my routine that whole day from a huge inventory of things, practices, and techniques that I have. And I'm going to focus on getting back to the baseline where you feel absolutely your absolute best on a straight line. My goal is to try and get to the baseline as early in the day as I can. So a great day is if I'm on the baseline by 6:45. Bad day is if it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Because in my mind, I've wasted 5 or 6 hours just trying to struggle to get back into harmony and into rhythm. The more you start to pay attention to the concept of a baseline, your optimal health at a point in time, and the more you set as a personal goal to nail that baseline as early in the day as you can, it's very easy to start rejuggling things quickly because you really begin to understand that's where the big investments come. I try and mix my workout routines between, just as I indicated tonight, between yang endeavors and yin endeavors. So I don't try and focus on one day just on meditation or one day just on qigong or tai chi. I try and keep a harmonious practice schedule between those two disciplines going all the time. And finally, the one thing I've learned, probably because of my extraordinary travel schedule, is I opt for 5 to 6 small food breaks a day. I'm really trying to stay away from these large feast or famine meals at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. I try and eat small meals and keep my energy right inside of an acceptable corridor of bandwidth. Several years ago when I was in New York, Jim Lehrer does an extraordinary program for professional athletes. And he came and spoke to a group of the senior partners at KPMG, and he brought with him a nutritional consultant. And it was extraordinary as she talked about what happens to your cognitive and physical development as you go through hunger pangs, by the time hunger pangs register, and where you oversatiate because you eat more than, as he says, 70%. You effectively take one-third of your waking day and throw it out, because the body can't operate at that level. It can't operate when it's in hunger mode, and it can't operate when it's oversatiated and has too much food and is trying to digest. So their solution for world-class athletes, and I mean 1/100th of a second, is the difference between the silver and the bronze. Michael Johnson, some of the people that they work with, Michael Phelps, I mean, they're working with people that understand optimal performance. And his message was, you have to take these small nutritional breaks throughout the day if you want to optimize in the high performance band. And that's what they called it, the high performance band. So that has really stayed with me. And the last item I would say, the practices, they're not 15 minutes a day. You'll have to start that way, but they do take some time. And it requires, you have to love to practice. You have to view it as play. I have never viewed meditation, qigong, and tai chi as anything as extraordinary grown-up playtime, and it is. And if anyone has actually seen me, I think they know I thoroughly enjoy these disciplines. So wear a smile on your face, because it begins to reprogram inside the body exactly what you're getting out of a discipline and a practice. So a couple of little rules that I would give you. 5,000 steps a day. That equates to about 35 to 40 minutes of walking a day, but 5,000 steps a day. And if you could err between very large, huge cushions on the bottom of your shoes versus narrow, go with narrow. Because ideally, if you could walk barefoot, it would be even better. So the more cushion you're putting there, you're not stimulating the bottom of the foot. And that's what the 5,000 steps a day does. Fresh air. If you could exercise in a gym, work out at a facility versus being outside, take outside every time. Over time, even in San Francisco, even with our inclement and fluid and volatile weather, you'll be able to handle the differences in the weather easily as your energy builds up. Be well hydrated. Make sure you're drinking lots of clean water. That's pretty easy in this part of the world, but I would tell you, in many parts of the world where I speak, that is one of their biggest challenges, is having access to clean water. Get to the baseline, your baseline, as early in the day as you can, and make sure that you tailor a program that really refines and enhances. And I do. I set one fundamental goal for myself every day. I want to ever so small ever so true, increase the wiring capabilities inside that I can handle a bigger charge of electricity, more wattage, more current every day. So the roadmap to help, a couple of cautions. These practices are so effective, be prepared for what's inside you. You've spent your whole life burying your little secrets, your little challenges, your little phobias, your little fears into the deepest, darkest, tightest circles. These practices reverse the direction. And guess what starts to come out? So it is frequent that people will say, I'm starting to feel anger, starting to feel resentment, starting to have memories come back that I want those memories. It's part of the path. It's part of the journey. You have to be prepared. You have to have the courage to face that. But some people are a little bit surprised when this starts to come up in the first month or so. The yin and yang is present in each of us. So look at the market and hope for better days, because the market's certainly on a ride down. But the yin and yang of that cycle means that there are opportunities. Selflessness, I think we very much focus on compassion and giving within our programs. It's why we're at a program like this evening, trying to share this knowledge. We feel so passionate about the gifts that we've been given, the knowledge that has been conveyed to us. We feel it's our responsibility as stewards to try and share that with each of you. And then finally, I would say, invest in those closest to you, your family, your sons, your daughters, your parents, your friends, your colleagues at work. There can be no greater investment, no greater gift than you can give than to try to help them improve their health. Because in my mind, optimal health is the currency of choice. So thank you very much. And John, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Our thanks to Christopher Lynch for his comments here today. I am John Milford, a member of the club's Grown-Ups Forum, and will be moderating today's audience question period. I know there are questions. We'd like to pass a microphone, so if you have a question, if you'd raise your hand, we'll look for the microphone.
Always willing to share mine.
There. All right. Please use the microphone so that the recording can hear your question. Who will be first? All right.
I really like your idea about eating six times a day, because I notice when I go too long without food, how I really feel depleted. And my problem is if I'm working or otherwise not at home, like if I'm on a hike, you know, and it's like I don't want to carry a lot of food with me, and it's like, how do I, as a practical matter, take your advice?
Great question. I would tell you, my wife used to call my secretary and say, has he eaten yet, before she'd call me. So she very much understands what you're saying. I actually carry things in my briefcase. When I prepare for flights, I'll take a couple of small, little, almost in baggy meals. When I travel, even in the glove compartment of my car, I keep a little bit of stash there, peanuts or oatmeal, you know, healthy things. I even keep some things over at CPMC in case I'm running quickly from class to class, conference call. My day usually starts very early because I try to stay on New York and Washington time because of my responsibilities with Freddie Mac. So by the time I even get to our outdoor class at 7, oftentimes I've already had 3 or 4 hours of work outside, and if I don't grab something before then, I really start to see the energy level seep just a little bit. So just be prepared, and don't be the least bit inhibited of just taking some extra food with you everywhere you go. Yes?
I've noticed a change now that when I work in a garden, I'm 66 years old, and when I work in a garden, I can't squat down because I'm used to sitting after dinner about 6:30. I lay down in the easy chair in the lazy boy, and my feet have just gotten used to that. And then I take tranquilizer. I've been taking tranquilizer for about 35 years. I've been taking tranquilizer for about 35 years, so that I could sleep better. So I don't know if something is affecting me or if I'm getting older or if I'm, maybe I shouldn't eat and then relax in the lazy boy easy chair, you know.
What's beautiful about this job is people almost always answer their own questions because they already know what the answer is. Let me just start with, I wish I could look as good as you. When I'm 65, you know, I hope I can look that good because, you know, you look very healthy. And it does reflect that you spent a great deal of your life outside. But just because we're outside, and I think many people in this room can probably think of this. I know a gardener, and he attacks his work with reckless abandon. And so he's got this extraordinary opportunity to commune with nature, to put his hands deep into the rich earth, and to plant something, nourish something, grow something, groom something, manicure something. But it's a race. It's a race. He's got to get this done and this project and go over to that park and do the same thing.
I just want to add a little something. Every day, just about every day I walk, and I walk very well. Once I start going downtown, I walk very well. You know, my steps are good. But if I have to squat in the garden, I can barely do it. And if I squat, I can't even get up, you know?
Right.
So,
a couple things. There are some Qigong techniques that we use that, one, really teach you to come down and slowly up. I would probably say when you get into the squat position as a gardener, you probably spend a fair amount of time in that squat position.
Well,
and that can be...
I sit on the stool and then I can bend down and do what I have to do, you know.
Well, one thing I would observe, instead of that wonderfully reclining lazy boy in the evening, I would take about a 20-minute walk in the evening and just limber everything up before you retire. Because what it gives you is this extraordinary opportunity now two times a day. You walk sometimes during the day. If you close your day before you retire with just a little bit of walking, I think it will feel good.
But nobody walks around the neighborhood, you know, and I don't want to be a target for people that would drop by.
Well, then you need to come to the Tai Chi martial arts class. We'll help you with that. No.
Okay,
no, but that's – do you live in the city? I'll be happy
yes,
to.
I live in San Francisco.
Okay, I'll be happy. Why don't we visit a little bit afterward, and maybe I can give you a couple of ideas.
Hi. I do both yoga and Qigong, and I was wondering what you think about yoga and if you feel that it's as beneficial or how the benefits might compare to Qigong, because I love both of them. I'm actually a registered yoga teacher, but now I'm kind of liking Qigong even better. So,
let me just start with many of these other modalities I don't necessarily have that much experience in. But what I can tell you anecdotally, knowing people that have done these for years, I think they're terrific. I actually believe anything that you do with some degree of repetition and proficiency is terrific. What's important is that you love to do it. I mean, that it's playtime. If it's not playtime, then just go find anything that is playtime. It can be power walking. It can be swimming, but look for a modality that generates energy rather than expends it. And I used to love to play basketball. I used to do triathlons. And then I realized I was spending a lot of energy out there in the performance and pursuit of those sports. And I really became attracted to something that was building it every single day more and more. Because now, you know, the idea is I can't do a triathlon and keep the baseline the day after a triathlon because I'm completely depleted, which is why I find these disciplines so terribly attractive for me, because it allows me to stay with my goal of incremental improvement and more energy. And turning this side of 50, I'm convinced more energy every day is better than the alternative.
Very much enjoyed your talk. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
I have two questions.
Certainly.
Would you compare Would you compare hypnosis to meditation, where you get into your subconscious rather than have your conscious? Is that basically what it is?
I would not, because in meditation, you are the physician and the patient, and you control everything. We tell our students, do not get caught up in the whimsical and the fanatical. You stay focused. You observe what's going on. You let it come. You let it go. But our goal is to not to put you into a trance. It's not to take you to an altered state. It's to permit you to see the clutter and let it float away. And in that sorting process, you come out feeling refreshed and clean. It's literally like the long garage that has been neglected for 20 years that you clean up. You look at it and you go, feels great. It's probably the same stuff, but it feels great.
And the benefits of Tai Chi, could you tell us that, please? I know it's good for balance. Is it good for strength? What is it good for?
It really is. It's excellent for balance. And so I'm actually making a presentation over to a rehabilitation clinic at the hospital in a couple of weeks. And that is their question. As the physicians, we'd like to know that this modality is acceptable for people coming off of surgery or having sprains. It is great for people trying to focus on their balance. And so certainly older students are quite interested in not only maintaining their balance, but they're trying to enhance their balance and become much more adept, because one of the biggest challenges as we grow old is losing our balance and falling, and then the bones do not heal anywhere near as quickly. So Tai Chi is great for strengthening the ligaments and the tendons and the sinews. It's an unbelievable physical experience on the inside.
But cardio, it does not cover cardio, does it? Aerobics?
Cardio? I would tell you in the beginning, no, but I also teach a fourth grade class, and my son participates in that, and I pretty much exhaust them. In about 40 minutes, they can hardly stand up. They're anxious to go back to class. So when you teach it, I teach it a little bit different for adults, because adults really don't want that vigorous. But actually for the boys, I teach it as a martial art form. It is very vigorous, and they love it. They love it. And they're pretty well brain dead by the time they get done with the class.
Not a good goal, brain dead.
Well, the teachers would say it's a fantastic thing, because then they're ready for instruction.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Our thanks to Christopher Lynch, CEO of Ancient Advantage, for his comments here today. We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 105th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you.
Always fun to do this, John.